Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And isn't astral traveling wonderful? Don't we love it? When was your last astral travel? Or you might ask me, when was mine? And I don't remember one. And you might not remember one either. Maybe we're just not astral travelers. We would like to be, at least I know I would. And maybe someday I will. And perhaps you too. In the meantime, let's talk to a wonderful astral traveler who's been on the show before, and he's written a few books that are terrific. He has a new book out called Dance of Heavenly Bliss, and the author is Garnet Schulhauser. Garnet, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. I'm so glad that we could talk about your journeys, because this book has many journeys in it and many really revelations that you've learned in your astral travels. Perhaps our listeners have read your first two books, but let's just start off by saying that you originally were just a normal lawyer in life, living a normal life, right?
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden you met somebody who changed your life.
I did, and I can just briefly go over that, Peter.
Sure.
The listeners who haven't read my books. Anyway, it was back in 2007. I was still practicing law, and I went for a walk one sunny afternoon in May, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, or seemingly out of nowhere, a homeless man just jumped in front of me, and he looked like a typical homeless man with long, stringy hair and scraggly beard and dirty, slept-in clothes. But there's something very different about this guy. He had these amazing, dazzling blue eyes that were doing two things. First of all, his gaze seemed to be penetrating down into the depths of my soul, and I felt like he knew everything about me, even though we'd never met before. And at the same time, his gaze was sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and security and well-being. It was a wonderful feeling. So I stood there like a deer caught in the headlights for I'm not sure how long. I was like in a time warp. And then he finally broke the spell by saying to me, "Why are you here?" And then he promptly disappeared into a nearby store. And when I finally collected my wits, I went into the store to find him, but he was nowhere to be seen. I went back out onto the street, and I walked up and down hoping to spot him, but he had seemingly disappeared into thin air. So the next day I resolved to come back to the same street at the same time to try to find him, and I did. I walked up and down for a while, and I finally spotted him sitting all alone on a bench. And I went up to him and I said, "Who are you and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "Well, I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." And that was the beginning of a conversation I had with this man that went off and on for several months. He told me that his name was Albert, and he was one of my spirit guides in disguise. And he had come, he had materialized in physical form just for my benefit to start the conversation. And after the first three encounters I had with him, he no longer appeared in physical form, but he was just a voice in my head, and we communicated by telepathy. And so that was the beginning of a long dialogue where he answered all of my questions, all the eternal questions of life, like, who am I, why am I here, what is my life's purpose, and what happens to me when I die. And he answered those and many other questions, and he asked me early on to put his revelations into a book. He wanted me to write a book about them. That resulted in my first book, Dancing on a Stamp. So that's how I first met Albert. He then came to me. The next sort of series of adventures with him were quite different. He actually showed up in my bedroom one night in astral form and said to me, come with me. I'm going to take you on some astral adventures, travels to the spirit side and to see other areas of the universe and other places on Earth, because I want you to write about what you see and what you hear. And so the first set of astral adventures are detailed in my second book, Dancing Forever with Spirit. And then he came back again after that set of adventures for my second set of astral trips with him, which are now detailed in my third book, which has just been released, and it's called Dance of Heavenly Bliss. So that's where we are right now, and in fact, I'm in the process of writing the manuscript for my fourth book, which has even more adventures with Albert. So that's how I came about to being an author, and that's how my life was transformed.
Well, that's amazing. I live in a multi-consciousness myself because I'm intuitive and I really am always speaking with spirit, and it's amazing the opportunities that that offers. And yet I don't go out of body and I don't have the opportunity to have this direct one-on-one relationship with these spirits who are speaking to me often every day and giving me information. But it comes through not as obvious because they don't show up and I'm not out of my body traveling with them. So to me, this is fascinating. And you're not the first astral traveler who I've interviewed. And certainly there's a long history of astral travel. And Robert Monroe, he built the Monroe Institute based on his astral travels and set it up so many people could go to his institute and learn how to do this. It's not unknown. Obviously, you weren't seeking it out. It sought you out. And then you've had these incredible travels. And I can't even imagine being a normal human being. I even think I'm different enough and strange enough being the way I am, let alone you being the way you are and what you've seen and who you've talked to in person. Even though it's astral person, it's still you're present, conscious, and in conversation with amazing people who you interview, or they also interview you, in this book, in your new book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And there's so many stories in here. We could probably do a show about each of the stories.
They were quite amazing trips for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was very excited to be part of them, and I was happy to write about them, which is what Albert wanted.
Right, of course. Let's start off talking about Aglaia.
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's a city that you visit with him.
Yeah, a city on the spirit side. It's a white city because all the buildings were white, various shapes and sizes of buildings, but they're all white, very sort of a shimmering white. So it's a very pretty city. He tells me it's just one of the cities they have on the spirit side, but it's the only one I've been to with Albert. And
right.
It's really quite interesting because they, you know, they have a, it's like a city we might have here, except it's very clean and the streets are filled with souls. But the interesting thing there is that the souls of the spirit side, according to Albert, can appear in whatever form they want to other people. And they will often choose to appear in the form of a previous life they had on Earth. So these lives are in various different countries, various different eras. So they're all dressed in these amazing different garments, costumes almost. I felt like I was in a costume ball. So it was very colorful. And the people are all very happy, strolling down the street, talking in an animated fashion and laughing and so on. Everything. It's a very wonderful place, the spirit side. And Aglaia is really a nice city. And I met a lot of the people that Albert wanted me to interview in Aglaia were just outside of it in a beautiful meadow. So, it's quite an amazing city.
Right, and yet some of the other cities aren't white. Some of the other cities out there, apparently from other astral travelers' experiences, look like cities here, like New York City, for instance. And the people are busy doing what they do in those cities. It's, I guess, what it is out there, and you've learned about that, is that we can appear in any form we want, and so can reality in forms that have been created out there for us to experience, and we're part of that creation.
Yeah, things happen very fast over there. He calls it thought creation. You can basically create things just by thinking about them, and this is applicable to anyone. So, you know, there can be any number of different cities out there that some people have created, and the other people just choose, the other souls just choose to be part of that creation. So I don't, yeah. I'm not surprised when you say that there are many other cities there. I expected that was the case, but he's always taking me to Aglaia for whatever reason, and so that's the only one I've seen. But I agree with you, there's probably hundreds of different cities on the spirit side created by different souls for different purposes.
Right, and not only that, there are these places that we go to after we pass on that are kind of like welcoming places that I always like to say is that there's a Christian heaven, there's a Jewish heaven, there's a Muslim heaven, because these are also thought forms that have been created to make it easier for us to adjust after we pass on and not be shocked by something so different from what we know.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And Albert says that that happens frequently, or maybe almost all the time, when a person crosses over, that the first scenario, the first scene they see on the spirit side will be something that gives them comfort, that doesn't upset them. And so, like you say, for a Christian, it may be, you know, encountering Jesus Christ, and for, you know, other religions, the people that are forces in their religion. So the setting is designed to make you feel comfortable when you cross over. There'll be a welcoming party there of the people, the loved ones who predeceased you. They'll be there to welcome you and make you feel comfortable and loved and help you make the transition, because they don't want to shock you. They want to make it a very easy transition. But after you've sojourned in this Christian heaven or Jewish heaven or Muslim heaven for a while, once you get used to being on the spirit side, then you don't need it any longer, and you can just move into the mainstream of the spirit side.
Right. That's great. And there's so much in your book. One thing I got a kick out of is that they actually play sports on the spirit side, and you witnessed a game.
Yeah, they do play sports, engage in all kinds of sports, and yeah, I witnessed a game. It was like a game of soccer, except that the ball was airborne the whole time, and they did this through the force of their thoughts, and so they would, you know, the ball would be zipping back and forth based upon who had the, sort of the greatest force of their thought to try to move it towards the other person's goal. So it was quite fascinating. So it was like soccer in the air. And that was just one game I saw. Albert says they can do, when you're over there, you can do any kind of sports you want. I mean, you can create the field, create a golf course, you know, create a basketball court, and go ahead and have fun. So the whole thing about the spirit side is you can do whatever makes you happy, whatever amuses you.
I guess you can also create a body of water to swim in or
absolutely.
Boating.
And there are some bodies of water that have been created, and you can utilize those, or you can go and create your own if you want to. You can swim in it and surf and fish. And, well, you wouldn't fish because that's not, they don't sort of condone a sport where you kill other animals. But, you know, I guess you can fish and throw them back into the water. But, yeah, there's all kinds of activities you can do. And you can join in with somebody else's reality, or you can create your own.
Well, you just reminded me to ask you about a planet you visited where there was no killing. There were no carnivores. The reality was such that there were no flesh eaters. It was what all vegetarians would love to hear about.
One of my previous lives on this planet is basically I had incarnated as a Mustang, a horse-like creature. And this is an experiment. The Galactic Council, who's responsible for seeding life on all the planets in our galaxy, they had decided to try something on this planet when it was ready for life, to seed it only with herbivores. So there were no carnivores of any kind whatsoever. And they thought, let's try that and see how a vegetarian world would work out. Well, it worked out pretty well until they realized that there were no microorganisms that consumed flesh when a body died. And so after a while, the dead bodies just piled up. They didn't rot. There was nothing there to consume them. So they started piling up, and they realized, oops, I guess we kind of made a mistake here. So they introduced a microorganism that could consume dead flesh to get rid of all these bodies. And so they did, but eventually this microorganism evolved and mutated, and it ended up being into a carnivorous form of, it looked like a dog or a wolf sort of creature. And then so these then went about their business hunting the herbivores like we have on Earth. And so that was sort of the new balance of the planet. So the pure vegetarian world did not seem to work very well.
Yeah, that's so interesting to know. And that's true, for instance, up in, I guess it was in Yellowstone, that they got rid of the wolves up there that were killing the animals. And so they only had herbivores up there. So there was no balance to nature. And there was too many herbivores, and they ended up gobbling up all of nature. So it deforested.
They ended up reintroducing the wolves to Yellowstone.
Right.
To put it back into balance. And since they've done that, I don't know how long ago it was, but now the nature seems to be back in better balance, because now the elk aren't overrunning the whole territory, because now there's wolves to eat them. And so there's a new balance back in Yellowstone. So they found out, sort of similar to my story about this vegetarian herbivore planet, is that you know when you tinker with the balance of nature, you never know quite how it's going to turn out. And in this planet, the Galactic Council found out that having only herbivore organisms and animals didn't quite work.
Right. While we're talking about nature and forests and all that, you actually had an opportunity to learn about the Sasquatch and Bigfoot.
An astral trip that Albert took me to the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., and we sort of came down in a small meadow in the midst of a dense forest, and all of a sudden, from behind the trees came this tall humanoid, about 9 feet tall, had an ape-like head. Her body was covered with dark brown fur, we communicated by telepathy. She said her name was Xana. She was a Sasquatch. She's a very intelligent, sensitive, feeling creature. And she said that the Sasquatch, you know, under various names like Bigfoot and Yeti and so on, they've been living on all continents of the Earth except Antarctica, you know, for eons. And they deliberately avoid contact with humans because they view humans as a violent and aggressive race. And so they don't want to get involved in our aggression and our violence. And so they just they live underground, come out at night, and try their best to avoid being spotted. Sometimes they get a little careless and somebody spots them or they leave a footprint. But for the most part, they've been basically out of sight. And they have this, what she called sort of like an animal-sensitive radar that allows them to detect other living creatures for miles around, including humans. And so with that sort of radar, they're able to detect humans from a long ways off and go into hiding, and that's why they've been so adept at concealing themselves. And she just lamented the fact that it was too bad that humans, you know, have succumbed to large part to the dark side of humanity, and they've been abusing other animals on our planet, abusing each other, and they just wanted no part of this. And she really hoped that someday humans would be able to see the light and change their ways. And at that stage, then the Sasquatch would come out of hiding, and hopefully then they could live in harmony with humans. So it was a very interesting contact.
Sure, that's great. And then you also visited the little people in Ireland.
Yes, we went to, on another trip, he took me to Ireland, and there I met with a little person, about 3 feet tall, a beautiful little lady. She looked like a tiny, perfect China doll, exquisite. And she said that she was what they commonly call fairies or little people over there in Ireland. And she says they also were in hiding in underground cities, and they didn't want to have contact with humans for the very same reason. They viewed us as violent and aggressive. And she said that before humans arrived on their island, they were above ground and they could enjoy the sunshine and dance in the rain. And then when humans arrived on the island, they thought at first that they were just bigger examples of themselves. But they soon found out that humans weren't like them because we succumbed to a lot of violence and we abused other people, including them. And so they quickly had to scurry and hide underground, where they've been ever since. And they come out at night, and occasionally they're spotted again too, by humans. But she said, we're a peace-loving race. We want to live in peace with everybody around us, including humans. But we don't dare show ourselves because we're afraid that the humans will kill us and maim us and abuse us. And so they're in hiding. And they, again, like the Sasquatch, she said, God, I wish we could get to the point where humans would see the light and stop their abuse, and then we can come out once again to dance in the rain and frolic in the sunlight. So, again, it was a similar story to the Sasquatch, that humans are, according to them, the humans are just bad news, and they have to avoid them until we change our ways.
Well, how does Mother Earth feel about this?
Well, Mother Earth is on site, and one of them was to a cavern under the North Pole, where I actually had a conversation with Gaia, the consciousness of Mother Earth, which may surprise a lot of people that you think of Earth as just being inert rocks and soil and water, but though there is a consciousness to Mother Earth. And so Gaia basically reiterated the same message to me, saying that before humans advanced past the Industrial Revolution, they didn't really cause any much pollution to speak of, and they just killed what they wanted to eat for in terms of animals and so on. But since the Industrial Revolution, the pollution has escalated in a geometric fashion, and the humans have become in some ways more abusive to the creatures on the planet. She says, look, those other creatures are part of my family, just as humans are, and I'm really upset at the way humans have laid abuse on the other creatures on my planet, and I'm very upset at all of your pollution. You pollute my lakes and oceans and my air and my soil. And she said, I really need this to stop because if it doesn't stop, and it's going to end badly. And she actually said that she has the power to increase the number of natural occurrences, natural disasters, as a way of fighting back, like hurricanes and tornadoes and floods, earthquakes and so on. And she says she's been increasing these over the last number of years, and it's her way of trying to wake humans up. It's a warning shot across our bow, and that's her way of sort of saying, okay, guys, you are trying to curtail your pollution, but you need to do a lot more because you're still spitting out too much of your noxious fumes and your toxic chemicals, into my atmosphere and into my waters, and it's really got to stop. So she basically on side with the Sasquatch and the little people. She really hopes that humans, who have basically taken over the whole planet, hopes that they can change, that we can change our ways. And so that was her message.
It's amazing the opportunity you have. Is like you're an ambassador for humanity, but you're not getting any good news.
Well, not from this source, but they, there was no sort of inherent hatred or animosity towards us. They really wanted to live in peace with us, all of them, and they just wished that humans could change their way, but they're very upset at the way we've been behaving. And so it did look pretty bleak, but Albert said, after that I was kind of down in the mouth a bit because I'm thinking, this doesn't look good. He says that there's actually a lot of very good deeds going on in our world, a lot of acts of kindness that happen every day, acts of compassion that we really don't hear about. He says because our media tends to focus on negative news. And so we hear so much of that, and so we can begin to think, we're in a lot of trouble, there's no hope. He says there is hope, that he's very optimistic that humankind will be able to turn the corner, get over this trouble spot, and move on up the spiritual ladder, raise their vibration so that they can discard their negative emotions and embrace love and compassion. So he was very optimistic, but he clearly wanted to get the message from the Sasquatch, the little people in Gaia, to the rest of humanity, and I'm sort of the messenger, and I'm quite happy to do that.
Now also, I mean, there are so many different parts of your book, and this is only a half-hour show, so hopefully we can talk again soon, because there are other aspects that you've met with people, with famous people, and have had some incredible insights from them. But for this time that we have, I want to talk more about humanity in terms of its past, that humans were here. You had an opportunity to see humans here during the dinosaur era, which science said was impossible. And can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, that was a response to a question I had to Albert when I said, have humans always been this way? And he said, no, there's been some human civilizations in Earth's past that actually functioned much better, much differently. So he took me to the Akashic Records, where I went back and I saw a scene from like about 65 million years ago, sort of the last days of the dinosaurs. And there was a human civilization sort of that lived in sort of a tall walled city. And these people lived very peacefully. They didn't fight each other. There was no crime. Men and women were equal in every respect. They shared all the duties of, everything, child rearing, cooking, cleaning, hunting, whatever. A very equal society in terms of men and women. And they didn't pollute the atmosphere or the water or anything other than a little bloat from their campfires. And they did eat other animals, but they ate only what they needed to for food and for, skin for clothing and so on. They didn't waste anything. So it was quite of a interesting, didn't have any technology. They were very primitive. I saw a hunting party with spears, hunt and kill a Hadrosaurus, which they then promptly carried back to their city and just managed to escape a marauding Tyrannosaurus Rex who had smelled their kill and was coming after them. But that's why they lived in a big walled city, like 20 feet tall with 3 foot thick walls to keep out the carnivores like the T-Rex. And so it was a very interesting glimpse at one human civilization way back when had managed to live in peace and harmony. And unfortunately, that civilization disappeared when the asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula, which kicked up a bunch of dirt and smoke, triggered a bunch of volcanoes around the planet, and we ended up with a nuclear winter, which ended up killing off most of the dinosaurs. And that particular human civilization, they were buried under a couple hundred meters of lava. It's still there. That's why archaeologists haven't found it yet. It's too much rock overhead, and nobody's discovered them yet.
Well, it's also understandable to think this way when we realize that humans didn't evolve the way evolution says. We were seeded here. This was a civilization that was brought here by ETs to live on this planet in this small village that you saw. And so there are many other planets that have humans on them, and you visited them. and we can talk about that coming up, because we're really running late in the show, and there's so much. Your book is just loaded with, people should run out right away and buy Dance of Heavenly Bliss. It's available now, actually. It just became available. And how do people find your website or your books?
Yeah, my website is garnetschulhalzer.com, which is kind of hard to remember, but if you want to, if your people Google dancing on a stamp, you'll be able to get to my website. My website has information about all three of my books. You can download a free excerpt from each book. You can watch a book video for each book. And there are buy links on my website, like with the popular online stores like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can click on that and you get right to the place where you can buy my books. I also have, there's icons there. You can click onto my social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+. My email address is on my website, and I'd love to hear comments or questions from your listeners. Also on my website, I have loaded on all of the recordings from all the radio shows I've done since June of 2013, and this one is number 83 right now, Peter. So if anybody wants to listen to any of the previous interviews, this one will be posted as well. They're all there on my website.
That's great. Garnet Schulhauser, S-C-H-U-L-H-A-U-S-E-R. It's important to spell it. And I want to thank you. Hopefully we can do another show again soon and talk about some of the amazing people you met that you talk about in this book.
And love to be back in your show, Peter. And yes, we can set it up after our call finishes.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
And, thanks for being on Energy Stew. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HeartRiver.org, or 212-222-7748. And I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening. Thank you.